Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Get up again and smile. Get up again and smile.
Janelle?
I'm here.
Okay. I think I pronounced your... Can you tell us your full name, please? Because someone
Janelle, hi.
Okay, because I was going he like Michael Jackson, and someone said you're pronounced... They just sent me a message on Messenger. Said, you're pronouncing her last name wrong. I don't even know who this is, so... But anyway.
It's actually... We're glad. It could be either way. It could be hi or he.
I knew I wasn't that far off. Again, good morning and welcome to this. It looks like it's going to be warming up. I know the 29th of this month, they're predicting temperatures in the 40s. So we're going to have a nice warm February, but we will get slammed in March for sure during the state tournament time, as usual in Minnesota. We'd like to welcome everybody to the show. Our call-in number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And we will be live broadcasting via Blog Talk Radio internationally on this program, the Ron and Don Show, in memory of Mr. Ronald A. Edwards, my longtime co-host, friend, known since I was 14 years old, passed away in January, and he never missed a show out of 450 some odd shows, never missed a show over the 10 years, and I know he'd want us to keep this up, although we'll be going through some name changes and some probably some time changes here eventually, but right now we're going to leave it as is. But Janelle, you know, I was, this week we had some unfortunate incidents to go on in Minneapolis. I understand that there was it happened. There was a vigil held last night in downtown Minneapolis for two men that were shot on the bus. I'm not sure which bus line, near the Target Center. One just died last week, and one was dead right when the police got there, pronounced him dead on the scene. But it seems like there's an uptick in violence, in especially Minneapolis and St. Paul. I know St. Paul. I live in St. Paul. I know there's a lot of car thefts, young cats stealing folks' cars at the gas station while they're warming them up, and driving around, crashing into other cars, and then running. And there's a lot of that going on. I don't know how that affects you, Janelle, but what have you seen on that side of the river, or heard, or been reading about, or what troubles you at this point?
There's definitely an uptick, and there's an increase in violence. I grew up in North Minneapolis, like right in what you would call the hood. So I actually live next door to some of the biggest gangbangers in the state, in the history of Minnesota, and they were on the news all the time, and our neighborhood was getting shot up. Thank God my family is safe, but people used to just run around and shoot up everything in the whole neighborhood and just drive off. So it just seems like even on the city bus when I rode it, speaking of those two unfortunate events that took place where the two people were shot, I was on a city bus a while ago, and somebody started open fire shooting on the bus as it was driving, and a bunch of innocent people were on the bus. No one was hurt, but it seems like there's no progress. That was, 20 years ago. This is today we're facing the same thing. You would think over time this would be decreasing, but it's not. And I think it has a correlation with unemployment rate for Black males in Minnesota and lack of opportunity. And also, the school system and parenting communities aren't as well-knit as it used to be. So there's a lot of different factors that keeps this rate of violence increasing, unfortunately. And that's what I'm seeing. Hello?
I'm sorry. I am here. I apologize.
Oh,
I had
sorry.
It on mute.
I'm like,
you gotta
what happened?
You got to do that because I started using a landline because the cell phone was not reliable on this platform. But anyway, as I was saying, they arrested this guy named Malcolm James Leslie, 26, in connection with the shootings. He was charged with second-degree murder and remains in Hennepin County Jail, according to the Star and Tribune. Of course, we want to cite our sources. And it's really funny because there's another story in the Star and Tribune. I don't have it in front of me, but I did read it. This guy was civilly committed last year, which means, you know, he is not really all there. And I don't understand how he was walking around. The circumstances of the shooting or the situation of why this happened have not come to light. You know, we don't know if it was just a guy sitting on a light rail, two guys, but there has to be some interaction prior for this to make sense. And because those stories are in some cases hurtful and they don't really, you know, the news agencies, the mainstream media around here doesn't really want to talk about that. And it goes all the way back to when the little guy was shot in North Minneapolis and killed. And Mr. Edwards and I broke a story because what had happened, the mother was not even in the house. And it turns out that no one actually defined the whole situation. But, you know, out of respect for the little kid that was shot in his house, we did not go into detail on that. But it was an ugly situation, and we knew about it, and we tried to address it. You know, this is really early in the game, but we have a caller, and I'd like to find out who this is because my curiosity is just killing me at this point. Caller, last 46455, you're live on the Ron and Don Show. Can I help you?
Yes. You know, I've called in a couple times here in the last month or so. Month and a half, you know, and my thing is again, you know, I'm not for charter schools. I'm not for sending kids in Minneapolis to the suburbs. I am for the Minneapolis public schools. And the position I have is that I have put a lot of work in. I put 35 years of work in studying what has happened since 1982 when, Minneapolis schools, they closed 18 buildings were shuttered, 18 schools were shut down, and what I feel, the main two of those schools I feel shouldn't have been closed, and I think this set a precedent for that they could do anything they wanted. That's why you got to a point where North was about to be closed. That was what they wanted to do. They wanted to close North. And they wanted to use Carol Johnson, actually, to do it, just like they used Richard Green to close Central and West. I mean, here you have Central and West high schools in the center of the city of Minneapolis, right in the center. The center is the heart of anything, and you have nothing. So the kids in the center of the city, as far as high school goes, they got to go to Southwest, they got to go to Washburn, they got to go to South, they got to go to That is criminal. I'm sorry, but it is. It's absolutely
criminal.
I mean,
I was going to say I agree with you 100%. And I remember that time because I am a graduate of Minneapolis Central in 1979. And we had the most eclectic mix of students from around the city. The neighborhood thrived with culture, education, academics. Fun, sports, leisure, movie theaters. I mean, it was unbelievable. Corner stores owned by black men and black women in that neighborhood. It was Mr. Crown's record store where I got my first 45.
Absolutely.
On 4th Avenue, yes. 38. Mr. Rubin, 4th Avenue and 38. Mr. Rubin,
yes,
was the type of guy that came in there as a kid and you had 25 cents and it was 30 cents. He says, go grab that broom, sweep out in front of the store, and you can have that bag of chips.
That's
and
right.
Let you keep
that's
it corded.
Right.
That's what we had in that community when Central was Central and Bryant, which is now Sabathany, when Bryant was the junior high school. And sir, to your conversation with us here this morning, the class of 1979 in Minneapolis was so huge that Bryant Junior High School was a 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. They had to make it a 7th and 8th grade, and in 77 or 78, they made the whole school of Ramsey on 50th and Nicollet a whole 9th grade. They had over, almost 2,000 ninth graders. And
wow.
it was unbelievable. And then after that, they split us up between Washburn and Central, because that's what they had to do. And that was an overwhelming thing for them, I guess, but it was a great experience for us just to be all together, all ninth graders, all one grade in a whole school. And we really learned. But back to your point, the Minneapolis Public School System used to be the most admired school system in the United States. People
yes,
used to come
yes.
here from around the country to examine the model that they were using to teach. You didn't hear things like achievement gap. You didn't hear that because the black, the white, the even Native Americans, the Hispanic Latinos. And it was really funny. I was just talking to a colleague. I'm a high school English teacher, and we were talking because there's two 10th graders I have in a class, and someone in the school was writing papers for them, and the papers were extremely brilliant. And so I said, hey, guys, can you come up and read your papers? I want you to tell the class or show the class how this is to be done. And they got up in front of the class and could not read the papers they turned in. And that signaled me that something was wrong. But to keep going, I remember a dude from Nicaragua, a guy from, I think it was from China or Japan, and they didn't speak much English, but they stuck them in our class. And I'm going to tell you, by the time of the end of the year, those Asian kids and Hispanic Latino kids were speaking better English than we were. And these days, it's a whole different process, and they don't stick them right in the mainstream. And I think that's terrible, because I think students can learn. Peer learning is one of the best ways to learn. And this whole education system needs to be rebooted. Again, sir, you sound like you're very knowledgeable on this topic. And one of the models that we still use is called the Danielson model, the model created more than 50 years ago to create factory workers. And that model needs to die. It needs to die a long time ago. And that's one of the problems that I think as an educator that we have, these situations in the public schools with the gap, the lack of collaboration between parents and their students, and these damn cell phones. Off the hook. Go ahead, sir. Anything else?
They continue at the present time. The Minneapolis schools continues to talk about equity and restorative practices. They continue to say that over and over again, that they're just so in love with equity. And I went to they had a meeting over at Wilder back in August or September of 2019, and I went over there and there were some school board members who were there. And Ed Graff, the superintendent, was there. And when I walked into the Wilder building, I literally walked in. I just took a right turn and was right at the auditorium in the Wilder building. And there was Ed Graff standing there. And I told Ed Graff, I said, hey, you keep saying equity and you keep saying restorative practices, but look at the neighborhood that you're in. This is the Central neighborhood that you're in. Now look at all these people that are here. I said, hey, when Richard Green took our school away and they took West away, I said, look at what happened. You got Washburn. Right now you got Washburn and you got South that are overpopulated totally. I have. Ray Aponte was a good friend of mine. Very good. I knew Ray. I've known Ray for 30 years. And we worked together. Ray and I did. And Ray told me last year, I saw him last year right after he retired. And he told me, he said, if Central and West were open, they'd be full of kids. That's what he told me. That they would be full of kids. And you know why he said that? Because they got too many kids over right now over there in South right now. It's a fire hazard. And the same for Washburn. But they're getting away with it. And that's because
they
close. I'm telling you, I mean, I have told this thing, like I said, you know, and I think that our people, I had white parents come up to me back in 1982, many of them, and they asked me, why are they closing Central? Why is Richard Green closing Central? We went into the Spruce Club. We sat in the Spruce Club, and they asked, the white parents asked me, why is Richard Green closing Central? But about a week later, they kind of got the gist of what was happening. They realized, hey, this guy's on the take. It's just as simple as that. They just assumed because
he's
black.
It was unfortunate for them to close the schools because, you know, Marshall U, West, and those schools that were in Minneapolis that catered to the communities. But if you look back at some of the census data and the economic data, there was, you sound like you know Minneapolis, so you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
I went to Washburn and Central. I went to both of them.
Well, then you'll know them.
If I hadn't went to Central, I probably wouldn't be talking to you today. Because the people that were at Central were so dedicated, and it was so tremendous. I had no idea that Central was as good a school that it was. See, I had went originally to Washburn, and I got the hell out of there. Thank God for Central. It's what I'm saying.
Yep. During the 60s and the 70s, there was a mass exodus of white families from South Minneapolis and other places, but right now I'm just talking about South Minneapolis. Then toward the end of the 70s into like 80 to 82, you notice houses on Portland Avenue that were ransacked, and 4th Avenue and 3rd Avenue and Clinton and 2nd and Stevens and 1st. These families start buying these houses for next to nothing, moving back in the city over there by West, over there by Marshall U. And they start coming back into the community. And what I think happened is that there was a need by city planners and the school districts, even where West was over there off Independent 28, to restructure that whole neighborhood. Now they tore down West, put a YMCA up, and expensive condo, old folks home and condo units there, and redeveloped that whole area. Now, over there where Central was, Central had one of the most dynamite football fields, underground tunnel from the Richard Green Gym to the field. You know, they shut Central down. They didn't have the heart enough to tear down the new $10 million gym they built, so they left that up. It's now used by the school that's over there now. And, again, destroyed the neighborhood, the people, the camaraderie. And it's a really unfortunate thing that happened.
What you have to understand is that when you look at the building at Central and even the building at West, is those buildings could accommodate a lot of kids. They had the girls, the old girls' gyms and the old boys' gyms, and then they had the new gyms that were added. You see, because Central and West were two of the last schools to get the new gyms. You see, Southwest and Roosevelt and Washburn and Edison, they had got the new gyms before Central and West did. But then ultimately, Central and West got the new gyms. So it looked as though Minneapolis was really going forward with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the West building and the Central building, and you look at South, that's ridiculous because South cannot hold those kids. They just don't have the room or the space to hold all those kids. But that's what's going on over there. And they've been it's been going on. And I'll tell you, there are so many things that are just so wrongful with this plan. This 1982 plan has caused a chain reaction from then to today that the Minneapolis schools in 3 years could collapse because the kids people are leaving here. See, those kids, the people leaving here were kids. A lot of them were kids back then. They're adults now, and they know. They've looked at Central being closed. They've looked at North attempting to close North. They've looked at Lincoln being closed. There is no way that Lincoln should have been. Lincoln was very productive, an extremely productive elementary school over there at Plymouth and Penn. Why? Well, they closed it because they were trying to freeze out North. They closed all the little elementary schools around North to freeze out North. Because I believe once they closed Central, they felt like they had a license to do anything they wanted to us.
And I don't know if you recall this, but back in 2008, there was a whisper campaign that the University of Minnesota UROC or University of Minnesota in general was thinking about buying the North High campus and having a North Side hub. But if you remember, the violence over there was just off the chain, like it is now, of course. And but there were people envisioning. I mean, I sat in rooms where people talked about, well, you know, North High, because at that time North High had 174 students. That's not enough to even pay the water bill monthly.
That's a shame. And, look at that.
Yeah, and so
that's a shame.
They were talking about, well, we can make this a University of Minnesota hub, and it would thrive. It would be a campus in North Minneapolis, easy access for the residents. And I don't know what happened with that design or that plan, but I know that what you're talking about, you're on point, sir, absolutely, because several occasions, we remember when North High had under 200 students, and it was on the table, and we don't know of the plans other than Board of Director Carrie Jo Fiddler, who has been coming out very vocal about the plan and what's going on. And there's probably still a chance that they might close North. You know, right now that Lincoln school that you talked
about. That's what they intended to do. And that I'm not surprised, Mr. Allen, to hear you say that, because that was what they intended to do, that they froze those elementary schools, your Willards, your North Stars, your Lincolns. This is what the plan was. Like I said, once they closed Central, they felt like they could do anything, you know, they wanted, you know. And I just think it's very sad. I just think that to sit there and talk about equity and restorative practices. You know, I told Ed Grapp, I said, look here, why don't you restore the Central and the Uptown neighborhoods? Why don't you give us a high school, at least a one high school that could reflect and accommodate the kids from Uptown and the kids from Central? Because we had the best athletic programs. We had the best students. This district had everything. Like you said, it was one of the best districts in the United States. We had over 50,000 kids. When they over 50,000 students, and all of a sudden they come up with this plan. They come up with this plan to do what they did. And like I say, I called Richard Green on the phone. I did. I called him on the phone, and he knew. Eventually, he figured out it was me. He wasn't a dumb man. Okay, he eventually figured out it was me. So I mean, but I still, you know, and he went out to New York to do the same thing. That's the irony of it. He went out there to do the same thing. But you had people like Reverend Sharp. He went out there to do the same thing. But I'm gonna call back. I'm gonna go into that another time. But that's what he went out there to do. He got look at that job he got. He got the Chancellor of New York City Schools. How's he get a job like that? That's a big job. And he left here. He left here in 1988. This district was $25 million in the hole. after 6 years, 6 years early, they close 18 schools. All of a sudden, they don't have no money. Six and a half years later, and he goes out there. He just took off and left. See, like I say, I have looked into a lot of this. It's even fair to say that North had a renaissance because a lot of teachers from Central went to North. And you had a renaissance. You had Miss Harris. You had Mr. Robinson. You had Mr. Cooley. You had Miss Sandvig. Miss Harris. You had a lot of teachers went. Oh, Mr. Harilla. They went over to North, and North had a renaissance. Okay.
Yeah, I remember Fletcher Cooley, Peter Herrera, all those guys. You all those men and women that you mentioned that were at Central in Minneapolis that went over to North created the best learning experience for all the kids. Although Fletcher Cooley told me if I didn't act right, I was going to be a janitor in 11th grade. There's nothing wrong with a janitor, but I wasn't going to be one. And we went back and forth. He was a guy who knew what the hell he was talking about.
Oh, they were wonderful.
Anyway.
I knew them all. I knew them all, and I worked with all of them. I knew all of them, and I worked with all of them. I saw how they handled. They were very, very upset, and they knew it was wrong what was happening. They knew it was totally wrong. They knew it was totally wrong. They knew that it was totally wrong. Mr. Cooley told me that if it had been a white superintendent, they never would have got away with it at that time. They never would have got away. And at that time, I believe that. At that time, that's why they had to use Green to do what he did.
Absolutely.
And I like
and
to
on that note, I appreciate
like
you calling in. Go ahead.
Well, I like to use the reference of the movie 48 Hours because Green was working for the Iceman, okay?
Mm.
The order from the Iceman came to do what happened here, and he followed the orders of the Iceman. The Iceman is unseen and unknown. You don't know who he is, but he's there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, sir, we thank you for calling today. I'm glad you called early in the show so that we could get this in because this is important. And, again, call in next week because this piece of history is valuable. People need to know this, especially our young parents and our young scholars that have no idea what happened before they were in those seats. And we can keep this legacy rolling. Thank you for the call and continue to listen.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Wow, Janelle, he had a lot of information, and I appreciate that. And it's a good segue into our next piece. The Crown Coalition is an alliance of organizations including founder members Dove, National Urban League, Color of Change, Western Center on Law and Poverty that are dedicated to the advancement of anti-discrimination legislation across the United States. With the help of a diverse array of organizations in social justice, business, legal, and educational sectors, the Crown Coalition has had a tremendous success elevating the public narrative around this important issue and inspired a movement to end hair bias and discrimination. That, my friends, is the Crown Act to stop, I'm trying not to laugh, to stop hair discrimination across the United States against black people or people with hair that might not be regular or I'm sorry, I just had to say that. That's my funny voice that I have to throw in there. This week there was a meeting held at St. Paul's State Capitol. I'm sorry. Because there are a few politicians who think that hair discrimination is an important issue in Minnesota for black Minnesotans. The Minnesota Council of Minnesota of Black, what it used to be the Council on Black Minnesotans, is the Council of Minnesotans of African Heritage now. They changed the name, got rid of the last executive director who had a over $200 million package four black Minnesotans, and he had a direct contact with Governor Dayton, and State Representative Moran and other elected officials did not like that. So Ed McDonald was asked to reapply for his job, but they weren't going to give him his job back. Then they hired a couple other folks that just didn't do a good job and eventually left because they never came into the office. And this has been the legacy of the black council here in the state of Minnesota. But one of the things that concerns me and a lot of people that I talk to is that, is hair the most important issue in Minnesota or for black Minnesotans? Hair discrimination. If you want to call in at 347-426-3904, again, that number is 347-426-3904. The phone lines are open, but Janelle, tell me, is hair, black people's hair, braided hair, uncut hair, whatever, is that a major point of economic, lack of economic success or concern? Should that be the highest priority for black Minnesotans? What are your thoughts?
It's a priority, but it's not the highest priority. I think the context in which you're saying it is making it seem like they're making this the most important issue on the black agenda for politics, and it's not. It's just one of the several things that just go under the umbrella of injustice and civil rights. So it's really not about hair. It's about race, because we know that black people have different textures of hair. And that's not about actually their hair. It's about just them being ethnic, being African-American or African or whatever the hair texture may be. But it's a connotation of blackness. It's racial discrimination, basically, is what it is. I think they're micromanaging it down and making it a bigger issue. Like, race discrimination is still a really big deal in Minnesota. This is what, the third or fourth worst state to live in for African Americans. This is documented statistics, right? So it's like living in the South in the 40s and 50s, kind of like, but not as overt. Kind of like covert racism a lot in Minnesota. You kind of have to read between the lines to catch it, right? But this is, it's not about hair. It's just another facet of civil rights. And I do agree with you, to some extent, I agree with you that hair is not that important. This is just falls underneath one of the things that society uses to kind of keep us out. So basically, it's racial discrimination. It's not about hair.
Okay. I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that, and we don't ever have to agree. And that's perfect, because we need both sides of the issue, both sides of the aisle, both sides of the table. But the thing here, it is, you're absolutely right, it is about racial discrimination. But I guess my concern is, how do we get to the point of this, moving past this Minnesota passive aggressive situation and going in and talking about hair when we're actually talking about black people and black concerns, race, and not sidestepping it and saying hair? I don't see those white dudes with those big earrings in their ear or in their noses going to the state legislature talking about we're being discriminated against because we have these huge wooden earrings in our ear. Or we're skinheads, or I don't see a bunch of balding black men going to the state capitol and saying, hey, we're being discriminated against because we're bald or balding. So my challenge is, again, you have people, these step and fetch it, who have been sent out to our community. You know, we don't have to have white people anymore to come in and micromanage us and to exert racism upon us, because we have our own people here in the state of Minnesota, that's what I'm speaking of, who rally the troops together and get them over to the state capitol for a hearing about hair when it actually should be about racial equity at some point. I hate using that word. I'm sorry. I hate using that. But fairness, I guess, would be a better word that I should use. And how do you get to the point? Again, I only ask questions I can't answer. How do you get to the point where there's a fair playing field where agencies like MnDOT, the Department of Administration, Metro Transit, The Minnesota Department of Health have 20, 25 years history of not being compliant as it pertains to engaging the Black, the Native American, the Asian American, the Hispanic Latino Americans in Minnesota. Okay, why do we have to switch from the racial inequities and fairness to care? That's my thing. And I don't understand that. Again, our phone lines are open, 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. If you have a comment or concern. I've asked via social media, Justin Terrell, the Executive Director of the Council for Minnesota's African Heritage, and State Representative Rena Moran to call in and explain this. Not that they will, but it's very important that we know, you know, what is the guts of this? Is there some money on the table? Is there some kind of change on the table? I know this morning, I had to leave the house this morning at 6:30 and go to work because I left one of my iPads at work, my personal iPad, and I want to go get it because I will not be in next week because I have training next week. And there was a guy on the road, a Black guy, holding a sign, anything will help, anything will help, at the corner of Snelling and University in the median. And I've seen him out there before. And why do we have those people out there? Why is there not something being done to address? Because, Janelle, you got to face it. For you to go out, or me to go out in the streets and hold a sign, we've lost all sense of who we are. We might have a mental illness or a disability. We have no pride. We have no a lot of things got to go, you know, for someone to do that. Something has to be seriously wrong. Why aren't we addressing that? Why aren't we addressing the thousands of homeless school children and families in Minneapolis and St. Paul? Why aren't we addressing the homeless veterans? Why are we addressing the destruction of the middle class? There are things that are more important, but again, as you said, that yeah, it's about racial, it's about race, it's about Black, white, red, etc. But we are sidetracking it with this Minnesota passive aggressiveness going towards hair, and it's really not about hair. With that said, we have a caller. Our this producer said this is M from the South Side. M, good morning, and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. How you doing, sir?
Very good, very good. Thank you. You know, it's kind of hard to follow the gentleman on before who was running down the situation with these schools. Boy, he's really got a lot of information, and really digest that. The reason I'm calling in, I just wanted to briefly say, you know, on this hair thing, you know, I read this, and it's like, you know, my opinion on it, for what it's worth. I mean, it's like the great coach Denny Green said. I mean, everybody has an opinion, but the great thing, it's even greater, is you don't have to listen to it. So, I mean, I subscribe to that. But there's already anti-discrimination laws on the books. I mean, there's already, mm-hmm. those have been fought for, they have been, you know, so all it is about enforcement. Then when it gets past that, it's what are your priorities? Your priorities are to stand up for people about their hair. I mean, it's already, if it's discrimination against you, you're being discriminated against, and there's anti-discrimination laws, and they should address that. But they don't enforce the laws that are on the books. You go read these laws, everything is on there, but they don't enforce it. They don't have the priorities. Another example, what you spoke about a week or so ago, St. Paul giving people $300. Okay, now this state, you know, as your co-host pointed out, has just disparities. It's embarrassment in disparities. But the state also has millions of dollars in surplus that they brag about. They continue to brag about all this surplus they've got. And all they can think about doing is maybe giving a few people $300 or worrying about somebody's hair. And, I mean, the priorities are just not there. And I don't – it's like all the politicians that I see, community activists, everybody's asleep at the wheel. Everybody's pushing their iPhones. Everybody's, you know, playing the lottery. Everybody's, you know, we have priorities. That lottery brings in tons of money that was supposed to go somewhere to people. Education as one. We don't never see it. But we get fed the pablum. We get fed the pablum of hair and $300 for a person.
And I just want to interject something here. Here goes the problem that I have. Again, we're not reading. The Minnesota Human Rights Act says it's illegal. Protected classes cover, discrimination is illegal. Protected classes covered by the Minnesota Human Rights Act is race, color, creed, religion, national origin, sex, marital status, familial status, disability, public assistance, age, sexual orientation, and local human rights commission activity. And you're right, Mr. M. The discrimination laws in the state of Minnesota are right here on the books. And I don't understand employment, all this hooping and hollering about hair as a distraction from what we really need to be looking at, you know. And like you said, they have to enforce the policies on the books already. If they had, there wouldn't be a group using the Crown Act and celebrities to go over to the state capitol and yell about hair when it's not really about hair, you know. MnDOT, let MnDOT, for one agency that's been out of compliance as it pertains to contracts between the mainstream and people of color. I'm going to tell you, I have reports from MnDOT in my files and on my computer where MnDOT received $63 million, I think, in 2013, and they contracted out, and their minority numbers were white women. And it said plain as day, they gave black contractors zero, Asian contractors zero, Native American contractors zero, and claimed they couldn't find any. So with that said, you know, that's a huge issue. So if those agencies at that level are not being compliant, where does hair come into play? Go ahead, sir.
Well, it really doesn't. I mean, but it shows that, you know, they come up with all these side issues. They come up with all these. And like you say, if people would read, they would see that these things have already been addressed. I mean, discrimination in the workplace is not allowed. And because of that, employers should be aware of that, that they can't discriminate based on, you know, race, creed, religion, origin. All those things are included. It's very inclusive what they're saying. Using that word is kind of oxymoron with these people, but the law is there. But it's the enforcement. And it's, again, the priorities, it's all there. And they continue to distract that this is a side, it's already been decided. You can't discriminate against people. Whatever their hair is, whatever, you can have dress codes. They have dress codes that everyone has to comply with in certain environments. But I haven't even seen anything in dress codes to say much about hair. Usually it's about length or maybe facial hair or things that are kind of spelled out because of that particular industry. You know, not because somebody walks into a place and they've got braids or cornrows or these are the things that it seems to be attacking. I mean, I can't think of, I mean, they're not going to attack crew cuts. They're not going to attack buzz cuts. They're attacking things that are really African-American. I don't see anything about Native specific hairstyle or it always comes down to what they don't want to do for us. And that's, you know, that's where I think the politicians just they just don't step up, and we're seeing it on every level with these politicians. Just get a spine,
you're absolutely right, and it's really strange because there was a time in my life as a youngster I thought that people had to look a certain way to look a certain do a certain thing, and when I was out in New York for a few years. I knew stockbrokers that had dreads all the way down to the middle of their back. These are guys. I knew people that And it was just like shocking. It was like, okay, well, this is normal. And then you come back to Minnesota and you look around and you see this distinct, purposeful way to assimilate and be something that you're not, to be something that you might be. I know that doesn't make a lot of sense, but it does in my head. And I have a book here that's on the screen. It's called, it's by Ian Hanley Lopez. I read it a couple of years ago. It's great. It's called Dog Whistle Politics: How Coded Racial Appeal Have Reinvented Racism and Wrecked the Middle Class. And I would recommend this book to explain this situation of why we're not talking about the issues of race and fairness and going to hair and other things that aren't really the issue. Again, the Minnesota Passive Aggressive piece is alive and well. Janelle, I'm sorry, I don't mean to keep you on hold there. What are your thoughts?
I think that when it comes to law, laws need to be very specific. So I understand what he said about the everything is already under the Civil Rights Bill, but unfortunately, lawyers, and I just went through a racial discrimination case, and they get very picky when it comes to what constitutes as racial discrimination. And so I think that overall, this is not the priority of the issues of the African-American political agenda. It is an issue, and I think it should be on the books because it's something that, unfortunately, there's already been cases of discrimination based on hair, and it was questioned if hair was even a discriminatory factor. So lawyers were arguing that hair can be discriminated against based on company, you know, how companies have dress policies and other grooming policies that they have. Well, somebody can in Minnesota, it's highly likely in Minnesota that they will use hair as they most often do other things. Like, I've been told that I wasn't a people person. You know, I was told all kinds of things by employers in Minnesota that prevented me from getting promotions and other things. And they'll just use the hair, even though they're really targeting your race, as a cover-up. And if it's not specifically written into law, even though there's already a civil rights bill, they can find loopholes around that. So we do need to get very specific on what constitutes as racial discrimination in Minnesota and in the entire country. So I think overall it is relevant, but it's not a priority, but it is relevant.
Okay, with that said, it being relevant, why not take the Human Rights Bill, the Minnesota Human Rights Act, and amend it to include hair? That would seem more logical, because if that's the case, these same state reps and senators that are pushing this can write the bill and amend it to say hair, because you're not going to go work in a hospital looking like a woolly booger. It's not going to happen, okay? You're not going to be at a certain firm not that recommends. Employers, I think, have the right to say, this is our dress code. It's business, or either business casual or blue jeans and sweatshirts and T-shirts, and this is the way that we prefer our employees to look. That is not discrimination in any way, shape, or form. That is the employer or a business right, period. But I do understand that some employers might feel uncomfortable with the black men with long dreadlocks walking around in a suit. You know, I understand that completely. But is that employer discriminating against that person by not hiring him if he or she has the qualifications? I mean, that is surreptitious at best, and we don't know what these people are thinking. I mean, we know by their actions, but we don't really know, depending on the situation, what they're thinking. I guess my point is, Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that the law, when they write this into law, it has to be very specific. Of course, the company should be protected as far as what they want as far as grooming, but as far as grooming is concerned, it's called the Natural Hair Act, not the Dreadlock Act, not the
finger waves or Afro acts. It's natural hair. So dreadlocks is not really natural. I don't think anybody grows dreadlocks naturally. So if a company doesn't want to hire somebody with long dreadlocks, they might not want to hire anybody with a bald head either. Or, you know, that can get really tricky, and that's where you, you know, that's where the law has to be kind of clear when they write this into practice, because Natural Hair Act is different from dreadlocks. So we got to really dissect this. And natural hair is, I'm an African-American woman. My hair is thick and curly naturally. If I wear my big, giant, thick, curly hair to work, that is my natural hair, how it grows out the root. Should I be discriminated against, or should I be told that, hey, your hair is too big? That's hair discrimination. Your hair is too big. Your hair is too fluffy. Your hair is, you know, instead of it being just dreadlocks or something drastic, a drastic style.
Okay. And,
does that make
and,
sense?
And to your point, and to your point, you know, you make an interesting point there in our argument. I know that identity in today's society is constructed by historical assumptions and how people are supposed to look. I grew up in the 60s, and on TV, you did not see black couples with natural hair or any other kind of hair, basically. And for commercials and things like that, I grew up where we watched Lawrence Welk on TV. And things like, and we see the majority of white women. Getting into the 80s and 90s, getting older, you start to see black women and men on TV. Men with perms and women, black women who obviously had natural hair with perms and long hair that would blow in the wind, just like the white women would. Their hair would be. And you saw a massive identity crisis, you know, socially, in advertising and in marketing, to that this is the way you're supposed to look. This is acceptable to society. Now there's this mass exodus to a lot of black women. I want to do, and I'm not a black woman. I can't speak for black women. I wish someone would call up besides having Janelle the Gold here on the air and defend this for and against or whatever. But I know a lot of black women, including my wife, and says, I'm going to go back to my natural hair. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to get a perm. I don't need to wear it long and down and look like, you know, this person over here or this person over there. And there might be a backlash by society that says, no, your identity, you know, to make it in the mainstream, you have to have this long hair. Your hair has to blow when the wind blows. It just can't stand there still and catch leaves. So there's a huge issue, a whole construct there that needs to be addressed. But getting back to the original concern is that, to me personally, and this is my opinion, and everyone has opinion, you don't have to listen to it, as, you know, Coach Denny Green would say, as M told us, who's still live with us, there's a problem, there's an issue when there are other major items going on to cheerlead behind that we know of, that we speak the truth of, and it's not happening. I mean, how do we get to the point where we're on the same page? How do the politicians grow a spine? M, any comments?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, this hair thing is, I mean, is this due to an industry standard? I mean, is there something in the industry that says that this is, you know, affects our business or affects, you know, or is it just something that this is something we don't like, we don't feel comfortable with, so we're not going to hire you? I mean, I went to a auto place out in north somewhere to pick up some auto parts, and I walk into this place. Everybody is tattooed all over their whole, everything you could see. Things coming out of their nose, things coming out of their ears, things coming out of their lips. Yeah, I mean, that looks hideous to me. But they were in there just doing their business and doing what they do. So, I mean, to me, just on the scale of offensiveness, for me to see someone with braids or cornrows and to see somebody with their bodies basically defiled in front of me, I mean, like you say, the ear, the nose, the lips, the cheeks, the skin, pierced, tats everywhere, pants falling down. So, I mean, what is the standard of this? I mean, I don't think they can come up with it. I don't think there is one. I think if you can do the job, you should be able to be hired. If you're interviewed, you have the skills and you have what it takes to do the work. I mean, I think that's the intent of these laws, is not to put people in all these boxes. And, you know, this is just an exercise in futility and paying lawyers to unravel a ball that the cat put together, which is unnecessary. But that's, again, back to opinions again, and nobody really has to listen to it. But, I mean, I think those things are important. I think that it's clear that this is targeting. It's targeting a specific population for whatever reason, as, you know, you pointed out before, Mr. Allen, assimilation, compliance, conformity, comfortability, making people comfortable. But that's a big scale. And I don't think you can use
on that
being comfortable.
All that, we have to look at the historical context. I don't mean to cut you off there, but I just was thinking of something here, and I was looking for this book I had. I don't know if I can find it, but, you know, back in the end of the 19th century, while I dig through my library here, Madam C.J. Walker had saw the invention of the straightening comb, hair straightening comb, used by her in the mid-20s as became the – she was the first African-American, female African-American a millionaire. They said that this was the way for Black women, and it had an avenue to increase societal acceptance in an era when minstrel songs mocked hair texture of Black people. And this historical content perpetuates itself forward to the young woman. I think her name was Chastity Jones. She got hired as a customer service representative, and they told her she had to cut off her locks, and she didn't. And, you know, the Equal Employment Opportunity, the EEOIC, filed a lawsuit, and it was never went anywhere. But this case with Chastity Jones, and then going back to the 1920s with Madam C.J. Walker, who thought it was economically feasible and mainstream feasible for Black women to straighten their hair to be accepted for advancement into the mainstream society, is a huge piece. Again, what Janelle said, her program, it goes back to race. Race is the foundation. Why aren't we dealing with that? Is my question. Anyone you can answer.
Yeah, right. There's a foundation. It needs to just be, everything has to be specific, unfortunately. That's what I just learned going through a lawsuit. And the EEOC, if anyone listening is being discriminated against for any reason, go seek a lawyer first before you file an EEOC claim. Just otherwise, it'll stop your whole case after you file that EEOC claim. And EEOC's track record, you can Google it, it's very poor, especially in Minnesota, so...
Yeah, and that goes for the Minneapolis and St. Paul Department of Civil Rights, who 9 times out of 10 are on the employer's side and will shred your case and go, "Oh, we lost
it."
Said, I talked. We have less than 90 seconds left in the show. I would like to thank you again, Janelle Hehe, and M for calling in and being a part of this this program. We'll be back next Saturday, and we hope you tune in next Saturday. We have under 1 minute left of the program now, and as always, we're going to take it away with our friend, our soul brother.